You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
According to a new poll from Reason Magazine, 68% of Americans think it should be illegal for kids 9 and under to play unsupervised in parks. 43% say it should be illegal for kids aged 12. Our next guest says adults today have unrealistic attitudes about how dangerous the world is and the capabilities of kids. Her advice, let kids get out and play. They're going to be all right.
Lenore Scanese joins us now. She's a public speaker, blogger, and author of the book and blog Free Range Kids. Lenore, thanks for being here.
Where I'm from.
Well, looking at those results again, 68% of respondents said it should be illegal for kids 9 and under to play alone. 43% said the same thing for 12-year-olds. What does that say to you?
Well, it says to me so many things that I'm glad we have half an hour. But basically it says that we think that children need our eyes upon them almost every single second of every single day, or else they're in horrible danger, which is such a disconnect with the fact that we're living in pretty much the safest times in human history that it boggles my mind every time I think about it. I don't know about you, but when I was 9, I was on my bike, I was riding to the library in Wilmette, Illinois, and nobody was sitting at home thinking, oh my God, I hope she makes it, this is so terrible, I just am counting the seconds, because that's not the way people used to think. They used to have a better grasp of reality. But now we're all supposed to think in terms of how we'd feel if our children ended up dead in almost any situation. That's really what you're encouraged to do. Imagine the very worst case scenario and then think about how terrible you'd feel and the news coverage and the funeral. And finally, you just don't let your kids do anything. And even if you do, now there's a percentage of the population, a majority, that wants to see you arrested if you so much as trust your kid playing in the park.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the news, because you do turn on the news on any given day or flip through the paper, and there is that horrible story there that makes you clench your teeth and pull your hair out and freak out, basically. And you think, you know, well, someone is drawing that unlucky number. It better not be my kid. I better not be the parent who lets down their guard. Isn't there something to that?
There's a lot to it. Every emotion that you've just mentioned is one that I know I've felt and that I think that a lot of other parents feel, but it is a false idea that there's some way of keeping our kids absolutely perfectly safe, and if we only don't let them do anything ever or are attached to them, whether by GPSing them or holding their hand or watching them like a hawk until they're 18, we will keep them safe. There's this weird new idea that unless we are personally with them, they are not safe, but if we are apart from them, they are suddenly unsafe, and that's just not the case. I mean, you know, if we're worrying about kids dying, and I think that's what we were just talking about, I mean, the number one way kids die is as passengers in cars, passengers in cars in car seats and with loving parents who are driving them around. And so if we really wanted to freak out every time we thought our kids were in danger, we should freak out every time we put them in the car. Oh, my God, what if today's the day? I don't want that number to be mine. But we don't do that. We've only dangerized the idea of kids being outside playing. We don't dangerize or over-fret the idea of kids driving around with us in cars, because we have a grasp of, yes, it's not perfectly safe, but it's extremely safe, and it's that tiny risk that's just present in all life, and that's one I'm willing to take. But somehow we're not willing to take it in even the more safe situation of a kid walking or playing outside.
Well, maybe we will be freaking about it now that we've thought about it a little more today.
That is the one thing I do freak out about.
Speaking strictly for me. Yeah, and you apparently. But, I mean, is there anything to the notion that the world is so much more dangerous now? I mean, sometimes one feels like, you know, every other person is a pedophile if you're reading the paper. I mean, do we need to? Is it less safe or not?
It's actually more safe today than it was any time since 1963, which is... Oh, you know what? I'm actually on somebody's phone. Talk about unsafe. My neighbor left her door open so I could use her landline.
That's nice.
And now her child and babysitter have come home. Hi, I'm on the phone talking to a radio station about safety. And here, let me just give you a couple facts, which are that, what was I saying? Oh, so the crime rate today is back to what it was when gas was 29 cents a gallon, back to what it was when stamps cost 5 cents. Back to the rate it was when I was a kid, frankly. And if you were growing up any time in the 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s, it was actually less safe outside than it is today. But you're right. You turn on the TV and it feels like everybody's a predator. There's a pedophile behind every bush. You can't possibly trust your kids with any adult who isn't you. And even you are supposed to be, you know, a little worried about yourself. Who knows? And it's just the media has decided to concentrate on the story that gets the most reaction, gets people glued to the television the most. And that's why from The News to Law and Order to Dexter to you name it, Criminal Minds to the Bruckheimer films, it's all about children in danger because that gets the most reaction and keeps us glued to the screen.
Is part of it also that maybe as a group parents don't believe that much in the capabilities of kids and in what they can actually pull off by themselves?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question because, you know, parents don't think that they're selling their kids short, and nobody really feels they're doing that. But a message that a kid gets is like, don't go out without me. I'll be there with you. Honey, I have to be there. It's not that I don't trust you. It's I don't trust anyone else in the world. The message that the kid gets is, oh, you do not trust me. And actually, that is, it's a legitimate thing for them to feel because, in a way, we are selling them short. I mean, my mom, you know, sent me to school at age kindergarten, we would walk to school on our own, and then back then, the crossing guard was another kid. I mean, it was a kid who was a sixth grader. So what is that? That's age 11. That's the age that 43% of Americans don't think that children should even be at the park without supervision. And yet back then, they were trusted to get us across the street. So they had to stand in the street and take, you know, these little kids whose parents weren't with them, they had to shepherd them safely to school. So what are we doing today that we're saying we don't trust our kids walking to school, we don't trust our kids outside at all, even at the age that we used to think they could be babysitting or being crossing guards or have a paper route? It is too bad that we've been told not to trust our kids in almost any situation. And there's a bunch of reasons I think that we've been told that, but the upshot is the kids get the message, Mom loves me a whole lot. They totally love me, but they just don't think I'm competent.
Well, I can remember when I was a kid roving around with gangs of kids and, you know, creating fanciful worlds for ourselves and doing things like that. And, you know, I get my kids actually don't do that. I don't know why. Maybe I guess it's me. I have to do some soul searching after this segment.
Yeah,
but
it's not just you. That's what I want to always say. It's not that each of us has become a neurotic nut job on our own, suddenly thinking up, you know, all these scary, horrible things and how we'd feel talking on Anderson Cooper explaining, I just turned my head for a second and he was gone. That's a cultural thing that has happened. It's what I call worst first thinking. We are encouraged to think of the worst case scenario first and proceed as if it's likely to happen. And the way I discovered that, if I can rattle on a little more now here. Okay. Well, the reason I'm talking to you at all today is because 6 years ago at this point, I let my 9-year-old ride the subway by himself. And I'm a newspaper columnist by trade, and so I wrote a column about why I let my 9-year-old ride the subway by himself. And I ended up on all these talk shows. And it took me, I'm such a slow learner, it took me several years to realize that my crime was not letting him go on subterranean public transportation. My crime was that when they would look at me and say, but Lenore, weren't you worried? Didn't you think about how you'd feel if he didn't come home? Or they'd say, how would you have felt if he didn't come home? As if there was a question. And obviously there wasn't a question. It was just a chiding way of saying, if you had thought that way, you would never have let him go. So your crime was not thinking about the worst thing that could possibly happen to him. And after being asked that question so many times, how would you have felt if he didn't come home, I realized that that's the question we've been trained to ask ourselves before we let our kids do what you're saying you're not letting your kids do, and most people don't let their kids do anymore either, which is roam around in packs with their friends outside on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, having fun and making up countries and playing in the vacant lot and riding their bikes and all the stuff that we remember so fondly. We don't think we can let our kids do anymore because we think, no, we're supposed to imagine them dead. And if you start imagining them dead, you don't let them do anything.
Yeah, there's very little any of us would do if we just imagined that all day. But
right, exactly.
What do you think the kids themselves lose out on because that attitude has shifted?
Right. Well, I think that the thing that I hadn't realized until I started writing about this for the last zillion years now is just how important what's called free play is. And free play is not Little League. Little League is great, but it has nothing to do with imagination or problem solving or even exercise quite as much as when you're running around on your own in a pack, when you have to come up with a game that everybody's willing to play, and you have to decide for yourselves whether the ball is in or out and whether the game should continue or not. And if you don't get your turn, you can either stomp off, which is the way a baby reacts, like having a tantrum, or you can hold yourself together and go to the back of the line and wait your turn because that's what everybody's telling you to do. You know, it's your gang of friends, and that's the only way the game will continue for you is if you suck it up and sort of act mature, and that's how we get maturity. That's why we play. Mother Nature gave us the drive to play like she gave everybody a little older the drive to procreate. It's a way of teaching us the most important lessons that we need to survive, from cooperation to problem solving to holding it together when you're scared or angry. And taking it away and replacing it with supervised and organized activities, those are great. And my kids have been in plenty on their own, too. But there's something critical, crucial, primal, and just plain old lovely that is lost when we don't let them roam around in the packs you were talking about.
We're talking right now with Lenore Skenazy. She's a public speaker, TV host, and author of the book and blog Free Range Kids. And we're talking about a recent poll that shows a large number of poll responders think that it should be illegal for kids 9 and under to play unsupervised. A lot of people think the same holds true for kids who are 12-year-olds, too. And we're thinking about what that says about raising kids today and what that means for the Free Range Kid movement.
And we want to hear from you. Why do you think so many adults are worried about kids playing unsupervised, maybe at the park? Is that fear justified? Do you let your kids run wild and free without adults nearby? And did you roam free range when you were a kid? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Lenore Skenazy. She is a public speaker, blogger. She has a book and blog called Free Range Kids, talking about a recent poll from Reason Magazine saying that a large number of people think it should be illegal for kids 9 and under to play unsupervised in a park. And a lot of people, 43% around there, say the same thing about kids who are 12 years old. And we're thinking about what this says about parenthood today.
And we want to hear from you. Why do you think adults are worried here? Does it make sense to be that cautious, or are we way too cautious? Do you let your own kid play without adults nearby? What was your childhood like? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our phones now. Becky is with us from Nina. Hi, Becky.
Hello. Hi, I guess I struggle with this issue. I have a 9-year-old girl and a 10-year-old boy, and I have been pushing myself to let them venture out and go for bike rides with their friends. And I realize that it's important for their confidence and self-esteem to be able to do these things. But I recently was volunteering at a back-to-school fair, and we had a group there talking about sexual abuse awareness. And in my community, which I consider a very safe community, our rates are one in three girls by the age of 18 and one in four boys by the age of 18. And I realize that's higher than the national standard, but they do believe that we just have more awareness and reporting. So I guess I'm wondering, how am I supposed to wrap my brain around that and feel comfortable sending my kids out into the world knowing, I mean, one in three is a very scary statistic.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot for bringing that up, Becky. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I guess parents have to grapple with on this, Lenore.
Well, that's parents and apparently adults. If we're talking one in three, that's an outrageously high number. I haven't heard that number from any place, and I'm really sorry to hear it. What I've been telling people to do and what I've told my own kids to do is learn the three R's, because as Becky probably knows, and as I'm sure you know, and most of your listeners know, is that the vast majority of crimes against children are not committed by strangers. They're committed by people they know, often a family member or close family friend, somebody that is trusted. And so being afraid of stranger danger actually puts your emphasis in the wrong direction in terms of keeping kids really safe. So the three R's that I've taught my kids and that the Boy Scouts teach kids, and it's universal, it's not just me, is to recognize, resist, and report abuse. And I'm just going to go through them really fast if that's okay, because I actually do think the they save a lot of kids. Recognize nobody can touch you where your bathing suit covers. You can do this with kids as young as three. That's just recognition. Resist is, bad people like good people. Nobody wants a lot of work, and they will go for, most people prefer a job that's easy rather than hard. Make it hard for anybody who wants to bother you by resisting, okay? Not that you can blame a victim, but resisting is good. Kick, scream, run away. And finally, report. The molester's biggest trick up his sleeve is silence, and buying that silence through a threat or a bribe or whatever. But if you tell your kids that whenever something happens that makes them unhappy or disturbs them, they can come to you, tell you everything, and you will not be mad at them. They will not get into any trouble. You are taking away probably the biggest arrow in the molester's quiver, because you've taken away the silence and the secretism on which they thrive. So for Becky and for everybody else who's listening, the three R's are going to help your kid certainly more than just telling them never go outside and don't walk to the park and don't walk to school.
Okay, well, thank you so much for bringing that up, Becky. I appreciate that. And Lenora, thank you for going through the three R's with us as well. And we're going to go next to Janie in Wausau. Hi, Janie.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you. So this has really been a big, hot topic with some friends of mine. We all have kids kind of getting to the age where they should be able to be independent. And it's just so much making your own decision about how much you're going to allow your kids to do without you. I have an 8-year-old, almost 9-year-old, and an almost 7-year-old, and then an almost 4-year-old. As much as it is really dealing with the adult's response to that, because I feel like you either get it, if you share your decision or that the neighbors see your kids outside playing, you either get the look or a response of your negligent parent, or you get the look or a response of your helicopter parent. And it's really, I think,
it's true.
It's really hard to be solid and confident in my decision of making the right choice for each of my individual kids, because that choice is a little different for each one of them.
Right, yeah. Right. Thanks a lot, Janie. And it can be hard to win. Maybe we just go around feeling bad about ourselves all the time.
She is so right. And not only are we hard on ourselves, it's become the number one spectator sport in America is commenting on everyone else's parenting. I think that's, even when celebrities are pregnant, I mean, there's the bump watch. I mean, we're just fascinated by the whole idea of parenting now. I'm not quite sure why. But that's one of the reasons that I try not to say, if you don't raise your kids this exactly my way, which even I don't raise my kids exactly my way all the time, that something terrible will happen to them or that you're a terrible parent. I think she's right. You know your kids. You know they're all different. Sometimes you make a lousy decision. You look back on it. You go, I shouldn't have done that. Nobody is perfect. And the idea that you have to be perfect is a wild one, because if we had to be perfect, there wouldn't be a human species. Throughout most of history, the parents were 14-year-olds, right? And they didn't read Dr. Spock. They didn't have no attachment parenting. They didn't read me, even. Hard to believe. and yet they managed to, keep the species going. We've got 7 billion of us on the planet. So the idea that you have to do everything right or a certain way is ridiculous. And the only confidence I would try to give parents is to realize that they don't have to be perfect. I hope they don't think that I'm saying that you must be, let your kids go at age 5, and then by 7 they have to be cooking dinner, and by 9 they have to be those, crossing guards. Otherwise, they've lost every opportunity to develop a soul. That's not what I'm saying. My book and my blog and Free Range Kids Everything is not about how to parent. It's only about trying to understand and detox from the overweening fear that's been shoved down our throats by, Nancy Grace and Law and Order and warnings sent out by the school whenever a van passes a bus stop. I just am sick of the idea that our children are in constant danger, and that's all I'm trying to do is just fight that idea, because I find that idea a lie.
There's a comment here from Facebook I want to read. This is from Brian. He says, wow, I was babysitting in third grade. If you hired a third grader these days, you'd be arrested. People really need to stop living in fear and enjoy the world around them. What do you say to that?
That's beautiful. And that's one of the things that I sometimes get to in my more philosophical moments is that, we are so lucky to be living in this era. It's true that, there's still crime and the world isn't perfect and there's pollution and there's some bad people. But But compared to the most of human history, if you told a person 200 years ago that, guess what, I'm going to transport you to a time when there's clean water, we've gotten rid of diphtheria, nobody gets polio, famine is a thing of the past in this country, and your children can walk outside with the crime rate of 1963 as opposed to the crime rate of, like, London in 1,000 or whatever. It is the safest time in human history. And it's not just me saying that. It's Steven Pinker at Harvard that wrote this book, Our Better Angels, where he analyzed it, and he found that we really are, despite wars and pestilence and bad things, and we're still living in the safest times that humans have ever seen. And to be ungrateful for that and to say, oh, my God, these are such terrible times, I can't possibly let go of my kid without GPSing them and making sure that they got on the bus and standing at the bus stop and making sure I escort them home, is a little bit of ingratitude for something that the rest of the world and the rest of history would have killed for.
In our last minute here, I want to ask you, if someone is listening now and they think, I do want to allow my kids a bit of a longer leash and see where it gets all of us, and, you know, maybe I've taken the 3 R's into consideration, I've made a reason choice, what can they do to take some baby steps?
Well, I'll give you a couple baby steps from my book. One is when you're at the bus stop with your kid and I'm at the bus stop with my kid and there's 5 other parents with 5 other kids, offer to watch them all. Say, look, I don't think anything so horrible is going to happen between now and the time the school bus gets here. I will watch them all. And you're sort of asserting the safety of the situation and creating a little bit of community. We're in this together. I'm not going to rape all 8 of your kids when you go to Starbucks. Just leave them with me and it'll be okay. And another suggestion in my book is one day, just try this experiment. Leave your cell phone at home, because even if you ask your kids to do it, they wouldn't. But if you don't have your cell phone and your kids are trying to reach you and they can't, they'll have to make some decisions by themselves. Can they go to the park? Can they eat a cookie? Do they have to do their homework first, or can they watch TV? Let them make some of their own decisions. We all thrive when we determine our own after-school activities.
All right, we'll leave it there. Lenore, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Veronica. I really appreciate it, and thank you to the callers.
We've been speaking with Lenore Scanese, public speaker, blogger. She's got a book and a blog called Free Range Kids.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. News is coming up next on Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.